Welcome to The Goodnight Show. I'm Shay Morrison, sleep expert and co-founder of The Goodnight Co. Join me each week for hints and tips on all things sleep. Hello and welcome back to The Goodnight Show. It's known that the ancient practice of acupuncture started in China, but did you know that the first documented acupuncture treatment dates back approximately 3,000 years? In today's episode, we're joined by Dr. David Shirazi from the Sleep Therapy Center in California. As an expert in this field, David has dedicated years towards diagnosis and treatment of craniofacial pain and sleep breathing disorders. However, unlike most fields, David's background has allowed him to view treating sleep disorders by a multidisciplinary approach, including the use of traditional practices like acupuncture. Not only is Dr. David an acupuncturist, but also a dentist specializing in functional orthodontics. Tune in to today's episode to find out how the Australian didgeridoo can help with sleep apnea. Welcome, everyone. I am very excited today to introduce our very special guest all the way from LA, Dr. Dave Shirazi. He is a man of many talents. Not only is he a dentist, but also an acupuncturist. And there is a long list of many other specialties which he may share with you today. So let me please welcome Dr. Dave Shirazi.
Hi, how are you?
Very well. Thank you for being on the show today.
Lovely to be here.
Now, apart from being a dentist and an acupuncturist, what are the other areas that you specialize in?
So my practice, I have two practices in the LA area. Our focus is on chronic pain, sleep disordered breathing, like snoring and sleep apnea, and functional orthodontics. Mm. And sometimes all three, you know, happen on the same patient. I also have, in addition to the master's in the Chinese medicine, I have a master's in psychology. And at one time, I was a licensed sleep technologist.
Yes. And so sleep technologist, is that building wearables, devices?
So a sleep technologist is the individual who basically conducts the sleep, the overnight sleep study in the sleep lab. So we put the leads all over you, the thermistor and all that. And we, you know, conduct the sleep study and score it.
Yeah? Yes.
And it's actually, you know, these guys are like superhuman because one, they're shift workers. So they're working in the middle of the night. Two, they're looking at like 20 reams of information that are ongoing and nonstop. And they're trying to figure out what's going on in real time. There is more data in one night of a sleep study than any blood test.
Wow.
A tremendous amount of data, and they have to process it for the physician. It's a monumental task.
And you run in-house sleep studies as well as at home?
Yeah. So my sleep lab, if someone, you know, if they have a prescription from their MD or DO and they want to go and do a sleep study at home, we can give them a device, show them how to use it. They wear it, they come back, we, you know, download it, give it to our medical director, and he interprets it.
Great. I would love to book into with one of those. I wear an Aura ring and love the data that it gives you. But I think that a full sleep study like that would be amazing.
It's a whole other level. Now, I have to admit the Aura ring I actually like. It's one of the few that I actually like. But most of them, like the Fitbit kind of data tracking, to say it's anecdotal is, it's generous to call it anecdotal. I find the information mostly irrelevant.
Okay, good to know. Yeah. And certainly the Oura Ring seems to have some accolades in terms of its accuracy. So
that's right.
So for people out there who may be interested in looking at tracking their sleep at home, what we're suggesting here is if you are really serious about it, making that investment into an Oura Ring as opposed to the other wearables on the market might be the way to go.
The technology is changing. So the newer devices that have actually invested in comparing their data against an overnight sleep study would be the ones I recommend.
Yes. Okay. Mm-hmm. What we want to talk to you about today, though, is to really focus in on the acupuncture side of things and how acupuncture can help people with sleep. People that are listening to this podcast are probably struggling with their sleep for many different reasons. And I am certainly a massive fan of acupuncture and have used it for all sorts of different reasons, but would love for you to explain why you even went down this path, being a dentist and then getting into acupuncture. What is that connection? And then why would people, how do you use it for people and what sort of benefits do they get?
I'll tell you the story, but I kind of want to preface it in a way that I know Aussies will appreciate. Everything I did was for purely selfish reasons.
Okay.
And even helping my patients, I do it because it makes me feel good. You know, it's like I get a lot of pat on the back and a lot of accolades for getting people out of pain and stuff. I do it for my own reason. It makes me feel good to right. help people get out of pain. But my mom was a dentist. She's still a dentist. And so at 14, I was very inspired by her. I love working with my hands. I love talking to people. I'm very social, but a bit of an extrovert. And I knew I wanted to be a dentist at 14. And when I was 18, I had a cold. And I went to, my mom is a neurotic Jewish mother. So she's like, go to the doctor, you have a cold. So I go to the doctor's office, it's Kaiser, and there's this huge waiting room of people hacking and coughing. So I just left. I came back an hour later, they called me in and they gave me antibiotics. And I said, okay, well, you know, everyone in my family is a doctor. So I kind of knew that a rhinovirus was, you know, flu related. And I said, so this problem's in my nose, right? He goes, yeah. I go, well, if it's in my nose, it's a virus, right? He goes, yeah. I go, well, then what's the antibiotic going to do for the virus? And he said, well, the antibiotic will focus on the microbes in your body so that your immune system can focus on the virus. I said, okay. I said, Mom, this is what he told me. And, you know, my mom is in that generation of you just do whatever your doctor tells you to do, right? Yeah. And so I took it. I got better. And, you know, back then it was before internet. So I looked, you know, did the research on it in the library, and I found out, you know, at 18, I was already like towards the end of my freshman year in college. I looked at it. And even then in 1992, we knew that you're not supposed to take antibiotics for viral infections because you could develop resistance to it. So I genuinely thought that these people don't know what the hell they're doing.
Yeah.
And that I should learn something a little bit more holistic so that when I have my own family, I can help them more holistically.
Yeah.
Right. Because if all they have is antibiotics and steroids, what if you don't need either of those? You just want someone to fix the problem, you know?
That's right.
So that was my only original intention, honestly.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, you know, I thought more and more about it. And then when I was in further, you know, in college, I was studying martial arts and I studied Shaolin Kung Fu, and my instructor was a dental technician in the army.
Wow.
And he knew I wanted to be a dentist and I was already a dental assistant. So he's like, you got to study acupuncture. I said, okay, that sounds like something holistic that I could learn. 5,000 years of data, you know,
yeah.
There's got to be some validity to it. So as soon as I left for dental school, graduated and immediately started acupuncture school, Oriental Medical School. And actually, if anyone's offended by that, it's actually called Oriental Medical School at my school. I didn't name it that.
Yes.
And I loved it. I absolutely loved it. And while I went to school part-time because I worked full-time and I did about 200 hours of CE a year.
Yeah. Right?
And by the time I had my two master's degrees, I was lecturing and I put all my degrees up as a dentist, and people would say, but you're so young. And I would just say, oh, I'm not married yet. And the whole room would say, oh, that's how he did it. That's how he did it. So when I got out of dental school, I was doing a lot of functional orthodontics straight away. Mm-hmm. And I loved all aspects of dentistry. I loved, you know, extractions. I loved surgery, perio, root canals. I loved all of it. But orthodontics was a bit special to me because you could affect a person's life more than just, you know, filling a tooth, for example. Mm-hmm. Not that filling a tooth is a minor thing. I mean, you don't get your tooth filled, you can't eat. Mm-hmm. So as I was doing that, I got into the clinic in acupuncture school. And they, of course, would say, you can cure this with this treatment, you can cure that. And I just remember thinking, okay, you're just getting a little bit ahead of yourself. That's a little bit of wishful thinking. Come on, you know. and I guess you could say a fair bit of skepticism. And when I was treating these kids with the functional ortho, their headaches were going away, their ADD was going away, their hyperactivity was going away, their bedwetting was going away. But we knew that. I kind of expected that, to be honest. And then their parents would say, hey, you helped me with my kid. Can you do that for me too? I have these terrible headaches, and or actually I have a TMJ problem. And so I would make them an appliance. And the first time it happened, I remember this patient says, you know, doc, my migraines are gone. And I said, well, good for you. And they said, no, my migraines come back when I take out your appliance. And I thought, well, that's weird. I didn't think anything of it. I just thought that was a weird overlap. And then it literally happened, the exact same scenario, just a month or two later. And I thought, okay, now this is weird. So I talked it over with my study group. And they're like, well, yes, 75% of headaches and migraines come from the jaw. And I said, yeah. How is this possible? I didn't know this. Surely I would know if that were the case. So I surely didn't know. And I did the research behind it. And there is a tremendous amount of literature behind it. It's mm-hmm. tremendous. You cannot deny it.
Yeah.
You cannot deny it. So I started doing more and more of these adult TMJ cases, getting good results. And then as I got into the acupuncture clinic, we were doing acupuncture for just pain, right? And I was getting tremendous results. And I combined the two together and I was blown away. It was so great, you know, because it seems like one side was picking up the shortfalls of the other. It was lovely. Because I'll tell you this, for example, like acupuncture for someone who clenches and grinds their teeth and has got jaw pain because of that, it's not going to work. You're just going to get a very temporary response because they're just going to go back and clench their teeth, right? And someone who's got like chronic muscle pain and facial pain, the appliance will help it so it doesn't get any worse and can actually reduce the pain. But the acupuncture will take it to a deeper level, you know, an energetic level.
And so these people with their, you know, with their jaw pain and coming to you with chronic pain that's related to the mouth or the jaw, obviously at nighttime, we spend a lot of time asleep, hopefully, but this is where we're impacting on this area, which can then, it's this sort of chicken and egg cycle a little bit where we don't know whether we're not sleeping because of the pain or the pain, you know. So how do you see that?
I would say there's less than 1% of the people who clench and grind their teeth that know that they're doing it.
So how do these people find out?
Either their dentist tells them from the where.
Yeah.
Right. Or maybe they put two and two together when they find out their jaw hurts or is clicking.
Yeah.
Because I mean, very few people know that tension headaches and migraine headaches are associated with a TMJ problem. Very few people know that. Yeah. Even in my world.
Yeah.
I mean, even in the dental world, very few know it percentage wise. So it's very hard because when we're asleep, we're unconscious. And if we're not getting enough airflow, if we're very anxious, if we're stressed out, we'll clench our teeth. And if we do this enough times, you know, when we're younger, it's a bit easier because our growth hormone levels are so high, we repair.
Yes.
Yeah. But when we're clenching our teeth and we're suffering and we're adults, it's just going to deteriorate more and more.
So if there are people listening who, as you said, a lot of people are just not aware, who might be experiencing some pain in the morning or they're not sleeping well and things have started to change for them, this is where they really need to seek some extra advice from their dentist around, you know, what's going on in their mouth that could be having this impact and really affecting their sleep.
And I wouldn't say just a dentist. I would say a dentist that limits his or her practice to it. And actually in Australia, you have several, I think you have six, you know, my office is one, actually two of over 65 centers throughout the world. And I believe we've got a half a dozen centers in Australia and one in New Zealand.
Right. What's the specialty? What are they called? Are they it's part called, of the group?
They all have the same, we all have the same name,
yep.
Which is TMJ, you know, and like the ampersand symbol. And Sleep Therapy Center. right? Okay. And then, so for example, my Los Angeles office is called the TMJ and Sleep Therapy Center of Los Angeles,
yes.
right? The main one that started it all is TMJ and Sleep Therapy Center of San Diego, uh-huh. right? And, you know, of Sydney, of Brisbane, of Perth, you know, you guys are not shorthanded in it. You may have to drive a bit, but you'll have someone that understands how to manage it.
Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so when it comes back to the acupuncture side of things, how do people use acupuncture to help them sleep?
Like everything, we always say that 95% of successful outcomes is dependent on the right diagnosis,
yeah.
right? So why can't the patient fall asleep, mm-hmm. right? Are they anxious? Are they overthinking? Did they eat too late and they have a digestive issue? Do they have a bed partner that snores and, like, you know, is restless, creating a ruckus?
Yeah.
Restless, exactly. And speaking of restless, they could have restless leg syndrome, which could be an iron deficiency. Mm. So there's all these things that are that could be causal. So, for example, like one of the things that is commonly known is that those with PTSD, you know, post-traumatic stress disorder, mm-hmm. will often have insomnia. They'll wake up sort of reliving the event in a nightmare.
Yeah.
Well, sometimes I've observed this in clinical practice, people will have a PTSD associated with the apnea itself.
Right.
Meaning they'll wake up gasping, right? Like that. Mm. And it's not, they weren't gasping because of a nightmare. They were gasping because of the apnea.
Mm.
And it's a weird feeling. Like, you don't feel like you can trust yourself to sleep.
Yeah.
Right. So what ends up happening is, let's say they had the apneic event at 2:35 AM, right? When they can have an insomnia where they wake up at exactly 2:35 AM and it's hard for them to go back to sleep because of that.
Yeah.
You follow?
Yeah.
So there's so many reasons. So and on that level, we talk about supplementation. Mm-hmm. We do the acupuncture. Sometimes they need something deeper, like some herbs,
yep.
To help them kind of calm their system down. Because here's the thing. We need sleep more than we need anything else.
Mm.
Well, other than oxygen. Okay.
Yeah.
So I should say oxygen and carbon dioxide, because there's two stages in our sleep, right? Delta and REM.
Yeah.
Delta, we get almost 100% of our growth hormone from that stage.
Mm-hmm.
And REM is where we do our mental and emotional processing, right? So if we're not getting REM, then we're not processing all the stresses and the emotions and all of that going on. And let's face it, lockdowns and fear of the unknown, that kicks it up. Right?
Absolutely.
And everyone is like perpetually held in the same state of unknown.
Mm.
One of the things
these are the things that are triggering people, is what you're saying. So there's a lot of triggers that are going on that are causing stress and anxiety that coupled with maybe the sleep apnea as well is.
Stress is huge. Stress is huge. Absolutely. So I tell people, be the guardian of your own temple. Right. So you use that in the context of what you put in your mouth, like the food that you eat.
Yeah.
And you use that in the context of what you allow to take in and who you kind of allow to be your friends and family that you're around.
Yeah.
You know, yep.
We're in control of that, and we can control all of those things rather than just turning on a TV or putting ourselves in an environment that we don't want to be in. We can control all of that and change the narrative. And I know it sounds so extreme, but this is what is going to help us sleep better. Being in that better environment that works better for us is going to help reduce all of those stress levels, which in turn is going to help us with our sleep.
Absolutely. And I will say the most important health that we can have is our mental health.
Yeah.
And if you're upset about something and then you don't sleep, then you have poor, not only cognitive, but emotional repair.
Mm-hmm.
So then that makes you anxious during the day.
Yeah.
Right. And then you're anxious during the day. And again, it's difficult to fall asleep. And then the lack of REM sleep is what causes you to continue. It just keeps getting worse and worse and worse. And what we all need is just, you know, consistently getting good night's sleep.
Yeah.
It's such a huge part.
And one of the things I'd love to come back to is that we touched on sleep apnea, because sleep apnea seems to be a growing concern. How long has it been around for? Because it feels fairly new, but I'm sure it's not.
It's like this. It's one of the newest specialties, okay, if you want to call it that. We've known about it for about 50 years, 45, 50 years.
Okay.
Actually, a very famous Aussie was the one who invented the CPAP machine.
Oh, right.
Yeah. But of course, sleep apnea has existed as long as human beings have. When I toured some chateaus in France, they talked about how when the king was sleeping, because I asked, like, why is this king bed so small?
Yeah.
And they said, oh, he sat up when he slept. Right. I said, why did he sleep up? He said the guard in the room told him that he chokes in his sleep. So he sat up, right? So, I mean, that was hundreds of years ago alone, right? Yeah. The Pickwickian stories, right, of the fat man that's always sleeping.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? These are things we observe, but we haven't put two and two together for a very long time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And sleep apnea is not only for old men, which, you know, often seems to be depicted. Yeah. It exists in children as well.
Absolutely. And here's the issue is, believe it or not, even though the majority, let's say 60% that we say are afflicted with it are adult males, mm-hmm, women of childbearing age, and children, even more so, are far more negatively hurt by it.
Okay.
Right? And it's because of those two stages of sleep I was mentioning earlier, mm-hmm, the delta and the REM. So we have four stages of sleep. Stage one and two is very light, physical body rest. And stage three is the delta, right? The deepest sleep. And that's where we get our growth hormone. And then REM is where we get our mental, emotional repair, consolidation of memories. And even beta amyloid plaques are removed from our brains during REM, from our lymphatics. So a child has predominantly delta and REM, almost exclusively. Okay. So when they're born, all they have is delta and REM. Mm-hmm. And then as they get older, it's less and less. And adults are about a quarter each. Quarter one, two, delta and REM.
Because just there, stop you for a minute there, Dad, because for people that are listening, when we talk about the stages of sleep, the four stages, maybe you can just explain that how we cycle through those.
Yeah, we have about five or six cycles a night where we have, you know, stage one, stage two, delta, then REM, and then back to whatever. Could be back to stage one, hopefully not. Hopefully stage two, then, you know, back to three, and then et cetera. Yeah. And so we do that, and we need to, and that's another reason why we want to go to bed early enough at night to make sure we get all of those cycles in.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. So in children, because they have so much more delta and REM, even a minuscule amount of sleep apnea can be severe in a child. Minuscule. Yeah. One episode an hour can be severe in a child. Okay. Mm-hmm. Women of childbearing age, and I didn't invent this information. I didn't do the studies on it. I'm just reporting. Estrogen seems to make a lot of things worse, okay, in the context of pain and repair. So women of childbearing age that have the highest amount of estrogen are more negatively affected by sleep apnea than their cohorts, you know, in males.
Yeah.
Yeah. So whereas, for example, an adult white male having five episodes or less an hour is considered well within normal limits, a female of childbearing age having four to five episodes an hour could be associated with depression, anxiety, tension, headaches. I've even seen it associated with fibromyalgia. So it's certainly a huge issue, and there is no training. There is, most medical schools have almost no training in sleep.
Yeah.
It's something you learn after the fact if you choose.
Yeah. Yeah. And so with the sleep apnea for, say, women of childbearing age or the children, is this something that can be trained out of, or is it only, it can only be dealt with through treatment?
That's an interesting question. So sleep apnea and snoring are typically deficiencies in neuromuscular tone of the upper pharyngeal muscles and the tongue. So there are actually, I believe, a half a dozen Australian studies on the didgeridoo with the circular breathing.
Yeah.
As you know, I have didgeridoo. I love it, but I can't do the circular breathing yet. But the circular breathing, that tightening that you do as you mouth breathe while inhaling, they found that doing that alone will reduce apnea by 50%.
Wow.
Which is huge. But you have to keep doing it. It's not like you do it and then it's all of a sudden it's perfect, you know?
Yeah.
With the larger studies show that over time, as people get a little bit more sedentary, over time, their apnea gets worse.
Okay.
So let's say a 20-year-old that had snoring and nothing more, by the time they're 40, they'll have mild, possibly moderate sleep apnea on average. Mm-hmm. A 20, 25-year-old with, you know, mild to moderate sleep apnea, by the time they're 45, they'll have severe sleep apnea on aggregate, you know, this, you know, what we see over time. And this is when we followed them 20 years in. That's just what we typically see. And, you know, I'm sure part of it has to do with, you know, America, we have this thing called SAD, standard American diet, because it's sad. And we have an obesity, you know, epidemic.
Yeah.
And so that makes it worse. It's not that the obesity necessarily causes it, but the overweight and also the edema, if we have fluid over our throat, the weight becomes more weight that the throat muscles have to withstand. That makes sense?
Yes. And so I wonder, with the, you know, you're talking about the didgeridoo, which completely makes sense because it's toning that the tone here that we need. Does singing have the same, you know, singing and the, they talk about singing with the vagal vagus nerve, and that can help to tone that. Is that a similar scenario for sleep apnea?
I haven't seen data myself, but I don't know is my honest answer. I don't know.
Yeah.
It could or it could not. I don't know. One of the things I found special about didgeridoo is the circular breathing. Right.
Yeah.
And I mean, if you think about it, circular breathing, you have to keep your airway taut.
Yeah. Okay?
When you keep your airway taut like that, you're increasing your basal neuromuscular tone.
Makes sense. So we should all take up didgeridoo.
Why not? Anything we can do to show love and respect and admiration for Aboriginals is good by me.
Absolutely. So I guess in you know, coming towards the end here of our interview, I'd love to know what are some of the things that you are suggesting for people to do that may have talked about today that resonates with people around any of this dentistry work, jaw, pain, you know, snoring, some sleep apnea. What are some things that you have seen in practice that have really helped people change people's lives that they've started to do that can help with their sleep?
So we give all our patients what's called sleep hygiene recommendations, meaning you want to keep your bedroom dark. You want to keep it quiet and slightly cool, right? You want to keep your bedroom limited to sleeping and sex only, right? No eating, no family discussions, no laptop on the bed, none of it. Okay. Keep it as a sacred space for sleep and sex only. And you know, and I have to take a side note for that. I sometimes get on my phone when I'm in bed as well. Right. So I have a blocker on my phone. And I wear blue blocker glasses that, you know, block that, because the brain doesn't know the difference between a photon of light from the sun and one from a cell phone. If you have, like here in LA, it's a pretty dry climate. So, and I tend to live in the mountains. So, you know, getting a humidifier for the room is a good idea to keep your nasal passage. I'm very big on air filters. Air filters are huge, huge, huge.
And this is in an air conditioning unit?
No, I have an individual air filter right next to my bed.
Okay. Yeah. And that is reprocessing the air. So it's filtering the air quality.
It's filtering the air. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. In a very quiet way. In a very quiet way. I don't want it noisy. If you can keep your head, like your headboard, away from electrical outlets to reduce your EMF exposure. And you'd be surprised, like 6 inches or a foot go a long way.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you don't want to yank the outlet from the wall, if you can pull your bed away from the wall a good, you know, 6 or 12 inches, that'll actually make a difference.
Yeah.
Right. And you have to realize there's a lot of sneaky ways light and EMF can get into a room. If you have a clock, you know, that could have a little bit of light in it. If you have a television, by the way, I don't allow televisions in bedrooms.
No.
In my house, we don't do that. And if people that need white noise, they can have a fan playing, you know, they don't need a television playing in the background. Right. Yeah. But the thing is, even if you think, well, I have a TV in the room, but I turn it off, right? There's a little red light to let you know that it's ready to go. And there's a bit of EMF going on. And I think Samsung actually admitted that all of their smart TVs have cameras in them, right? So that's electrical, okay?
That's right.
I mean, forget about the spying for 2 seconds, but that's a lot of energy and processing going on at the same time.
Yeah. And people know, you know, if you've ever been camping or had that luxury to escape into a more remote location, the sleep is so much different. You really feel the difference of not being so wired next to so much technology and light.
Yes.
Dark skies with, you know, no artificial lights, with street lights and all those things make such a big difference. And we're so exposed these days. You know, we leave our brightly lit offices into our brightly lit cars or public transport into our brightly lit homes. And people don't seem to understand that there is such a strong connection. And it's not just blue light, it's light, you know, as you're saying, and it's blocking that melatonin release. So we're not feeling tired. So Netflix is winning all the time. You know, they are the biggest barrier, I think, when it comes to sleep. Netflix is up there.
It certainly can be. And I'm glad that you brought up melatonin, because we need melatonin, not just to sleep, not just to shift our circadian rhythm, but also DMT, which is the molecule in the brain in the pineal gland that is secreted during REM sleep, needs melatonin to create it.
Right. And that's what allows us to go into that REM stage.
Well, that's the chemical that's released during REM stage. Yeah.
Okay.
There's a whole book on it called The Spirit Molecule. Right?
Okay.
When people die, there is typically a big dump of DMT. And when you hear stories about people saying, I saw the light, I saw my aunt, I saw, you know, my grandfather who passed away, whatever, they're usually undergoing a DMT experience.
Right. Okay. Mm-hmm. And you know, these are all the things that we need. We talked about the stages of sleep earlier, and there are so many different reasons why we need to cycle through these stages to help with our overall production of different hormones, that recovery process, the washing of the brain, all of these things that are required every night. You know, I talk to so many people say, no, I'm fine on 5 hours sleep. But the challenge with only having 5 hours is that we're not cycling through all of those stages.
Thank you very much. Thank you. You certainly said it. And here in America, the average number of hours that people sleep a night is 9 before the invention of the light bulb. So that means as soon as we created artificial light, we then went ahead and made it 8. And then now we've got our cell phones and television and Netflix and iPads and all of that. And then it became 7, 6.5, 7, right? And so we're really moving away from who we really are.
And I guess to that point, if people are thinking, oh, but that's just society and that's life, try a little digital detox, you know, just switching off. You don't need to announce it to anybody or tell anyone. You can actually just switch off from all of your apps just for a couple of days. Even if you did it for 24 hours, 48 hours, you know, 3 days would be ideal. But if you can do that and really notice the difference of how you feel, you will be amazed.
Yes, I agree. Go on vacation somewhere where they just don't have
Wi-Fi,
anything, right?
Yeah.
Yeah,
Wi-Fi or lights.
Yeah. Yeah.
Go camping.
Like, you know, it's funny because you could go to the bush in New Zealand, have no Wi-Fi, and be totally fine, right?
Yeah.
In Australia, you go to the bush and all kinds of things can kill you.
No.
The spiders you all have and the snakes you all have. It's unbelievable.
No, you would be fine. Don't listen to him. You'll be fine. Well, it's been so lovely to speak with you today. There's so much wonderful information here, and we've touched on lots of topics and would love to circle back. I think snoring is a really big issue for people. It's certainly one that we get a lot of customers asking about, and whether that's snoring yourself or you've got a partner that snores, you know, there are two sides to it. And yes, also remember that snoring is not exclusive to men. Women do snore as well. So I'd love to get you back on and really break down snoring, what's behind snoring, and how we can make some changes, because snoring, I understand, is something that you can make some changes so that you are getting a better night's sleep. Because if you are snoring, it really is impacting your quality.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. So not only for the person snoring, but the person who may be sleeping next to the person snoring.
That's right. We actually have one big study on what I call secondhand snoring, where they found the bed partner was having nearly as disruptive a sleep as the person snoring and with apnea.
Yeah. I'll put my hand up. That would be me. I have a husband who snores. So we would love to get you back on. It has been so wonderful to connect with you today. And for anybody who is looking for the clinic that we talked about, which is the TMJ and Sleep Therapy Centre, that are located in Australia, we will include some information in our show notes, plus a link to all the places that you can connect with Dr. Dave Shirazi. And where is the place that you like to be most, where people can connect with you?
They can go right to our website, tmjla.com, for both of my locations. The website to find a center near you is called tmjtherapycenter.com. And its center is spelled the British way.
Okay.
See, not the American way.
Okay, great. Yeah. Well, it was lovely to connect with you. I know it's the end of the day for you. So enjoy your evening. I hope you get a beautiful night's sleep tonight.
I surely hope so as well. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Cheers.
Thank you for listening to The Good Night Show. If you're keen to learn more about our guests or any of the topics we've spoken about today, hop on over to the Good Night Co. closed Facebook community group, or check us out at thegoodnightco.com.au. And if you're enjoying the show, please subscribe to us on your favorite podcast provider by searching The Good Night Show. And if you love what you're hearing, don't forget to leave us a glowing review. Thanks, everyone.